Welcome to Popular Cultural Sharing. My name is Lawin and I am your host. In this podcast, we give you an outsider's perspective about European life, culture, and pretty much anything that is connected to this continent. So get ready to learn something new in a light and entertaining way. Welcome back, everyone, to Popular Cultural Cherry. In this episode, we have David Wen. David is actually someone I met in Maastricht when we were both living there. David is originally from California, and he grew up in an Asian-American household where his parents kind of had that Asian-American dream for him. Do your best in school, get the best grades, go to the best university, get the best paying job, the highest paying job. But he actually left that all to do some volunteer work in Africa. Later on, he pursued his higher education actually in the Netherlands, and he is now currently based in Amsterdam. It was quite serendipitous because me and David, we had met earlier, but we didn't really keep, you know, close touch with each other. And I was on YouTube one day just browsing, you know how you go through YouTube, you just browse your feed. And I saw, he apparently has a YouTube channel, and I saw one of his videos pop up on my feed, and it was about his life in Amsterdam. And I thought it would be super interesting to have him to talk about him deviating away from that Asian American dream, moving to Europe, changing careers, how his perception of life in general changed, about family, success. So David, it's been a while, man, but thank you so much for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks, Lawin. It's kind of crazy how we reconnected through the internet. And well, it's amazing how just life works, right? A little bit about myself. My name is David. I currently live in Amsterdam. I've been here for almost 2 years now. And I moved here, well, one, to do a master's program in Maastricht. And that's where we met, Lawin, right? In Maastricht. And so I've been in this country for about 3 years now. But if I take a step back, I'm originally from San Francisco, California, born and raised. I went to school in LA, studied economics, and come from a very traditional Asian background, right? So kind of had this 10-year plan planned out for me at the age of 18. Started off my career in public accounting, consulting, then I went to finance. And then I took a step off of that ladder, you could say, and I left my job and went to Africa. I did a sabbatical, and that was a defining moment in my life that really changed the direction of my life, my perspective. And when I came back, I didn't know what I wanted to do. If not finance, then what? Now, tech was really big in San Francisco. It still is really big. So I went into startups. I learned about something called UX, user experience, and wanted to do something more people-oriented. So tried that out. That was a great experience. But one thing I did during my sabbatical was I did a lot of teaching. I taught in schools in Africa, in Asia, and I really enjoyed teaching. I've always enjoyed mentoring and tutoring. So I wanted to do teaching, but in the US, it's a bit difficult. And I learned about something called learning and development, teaching inside of organizations. So long story short, I eventually found a program in Maastricht, a one-year learning and development program. And 3 years later, here I am in Amsterdam.
Hey, that's quite interesting that you mentioned this trip of yours to Africa that actually, you know, helped you change your life or kind of push you to a different direction. Because actually, I went through something similar. It was straight from uni. I did like a 3-month stint in Hanoi in Vietnam. I also taught about like culture, especially to high school kids, like in English. So it was more of like an English training for like high school kids in Vietnam. And that kind of set my life towards a different direction. Like maybe I went back to the Philippines and joined like the corporate world. Behind my brain, there was always this, you know, this like, oh, the world is much bigger than the Philippines. The world is much bigger than the corporate world, you know. And I think that experience of mine kind of led me later on, 10 years after, and I'm here in Germany, like always made me curious about the world, curious about meeting other people, you know, learning new stuff about myself as well. Because just living outside of your country, you know, you learn so much. I was just wondering how that, cool experience of yours in Africa actually like affected you. So you said you're able to, you know, teach and that's kind of like what your passion is, kind of like in that direction. But first, like, how did you actually end up thinking about going to Africa? And second, like, how did that like experience really like impact your life?
Yeah, you bring up a good point, right? If I take a step back, I think before that big defining moment, another defining moment earlier on in my life was going abroad for the first time, studying abroad, right? I studied abroad 3 times when I was in college. The first time in Shanghai, the second time in Taiwan, the third time in Spain. So by studying abroad, it opened my eyes up to this whole new world, right? Because sometimes you grow up and you think about, you know, there's like a linear path, right? But that experience really opened up the world for me, that there's different types of lifestyles, like there's that European lifestyle, there's different lifestyles. And so when it came to this point in my life where I had this opportunity to go to Africa, it made that leap a lot easier. It was a point in my life where, how old was I at that time? 25, 26. And also the beauty of the internet is you learn about and you read about different options in life. And I was a point in my life where I was trying to figure out what I wanted my life to be. And I remember reading all these articles on Thought Catalog and YouTube videos about like what you should do with your life, purpose, meaning, and all of that stuff. And I realized I was at a point in my life where my values weren't aligned with what I was doing. And so I jumped off the ladder and I took an opportunity to work for a nonprofit in Zimbabwe. And I bought a one-way ticket there. And from there, I just started figuring things out. It was a big leap of faith. I didn't really have any big plans after that. But essentially, that was a defining moment and turning point in my life, because here I was, like before, I had a 10-year plan. And then you jump into the unknown, right? And you don't really know what's coming up ahead. And looking back, that really changed my perspective and also my mindset as well. It made me stop, pause, and reflect on what's actually important to me in life. Because before, it was really just about like going to a good school, getting a good degree, getting a good job, right? Also, it's like that blend of the Asian and American mentality, like, okay, you got to have success. This is what success is. But then there's many different types of success, right? It's not just one form. And that year gave me the time to reflect on what success meant for me. So that was a long story, but it gave me time to really think about what success really means for me. What is the type of life that I want to live?
Okay. That's interesting, because, you know, both of us, we're Asian, like we're brought up, even though you grew up in the US, like you're brought up in a very Asian household, like you mentioned. And one of the things like Asian parents are kind of notorious for is kind of having a goal for their children when you're just kind of following into their footsteps when, you know, you wanted, well, they maybe wanted that for you, like to work corporate, to go to a good school and work the 9-to-5 until you're 60 or whatever. But the problem with that is a lot of people, because you rush through school so quickly, you get the first job so quickly, and then you just stay there until you're 60. I think a lot of people, and this is a problem I see with a lot of my friends as well, is that you never really take the time to actually try to understand yourself, try to see the bigger picture, and try to build your own kind of goal for yourself. So I think that's something that you were able to do. Might have been, you know, just because you're curious, or it might have been just like serendipitous, but like you were able to take that step back and actually figure out like, hey, what do I want in my life? And which is something that a lot of people, like from like Asian households, would not really do. It would be quote unquote like frowned upon by their family or whatever. Yeah. So I'm just wondering how that go with your parents when you told them, oh, I'm quitting, I went to a good school, I worked as an accountant, I worked for big companies, and now I'm just gonna go do a sabbatical in Zimbabwe on a one-way ticket.
The easiest thing to do is to not tell them until 1 week before you're leaving. And that's what I did. Everything happened so fast. But going back to your point, yeah, like growing up with immigrant parents in the US, in a way, I felt a lot of responsibility, because perhaps this is the responsibility that many of us Asian-born Americans feel like. You have immigrant parents who immigrate to the US for a better life, not just for themselves, but mainly for their children. So I had this burden and responsibility that I needed to go to a good school, get a good job, because that was their definition of success. And I totally understand now, because where they come from, my parents grew up in the Cultural Revolution in China, where everything was taken away from them. So for them, it was really about stability, right? If there was one word they instilled in me was like education, job, it was because of stability. And for their kids, success was stability. And they only knew this one form of stability, and that was education, a good job. And so as a result of that, there was a lot of conflict between me and them, right? Because for them, they had this one view of what success was. Now for me, growing up in the West, right, it's that success, that definition, but I learned about different definitions of success, right? Like, and so we clashed a lot. So when I did leave, it was difficult for them to really understand what I was doing. And I basically gave them 1 week notice, right? I was in LA. I remember leaving my job, and I had 3 weeks to pack my bags from LA to get all my travel shots from the hospital. And I moved everything back to San Francisco to my parents' place 1 week before my flight. And then I told them. And I think they didn't have the time to really process what and why. And that was like my strategy. But yeah, it was difficult because they couldn't understand what I was doing. To be honest, I didn't really understand what I was doing as well, because I was raised very structured. This is what you got to do. This is the plan. And then you just jump off to the unknown. And so it was difficult. It was challenging. I think from that experience, it opened up the doors for conversation as well. And it made my relationship better with my parents, because it forced me to have these challenging conversations with them. Like, David, like, why are you doing this? Like, I'm worried about you. And, you know, Asian parents and their children, you don't have these like very open discussions, right? That's more of a Western thing. And so this experience forced us to have these deeper talks about, well, I'm worried about you, David. I'm worried about you. Why are you doing this? Are you going to be okay? And it forced us to have dialogue. So when I look back, it actually deepened our relationship. It forced us to have deeper conversations, because before it was very surface level. Like, how are you doing? Are you doing okay? Are you eating enough? How's the job? Everything okay? We never had discussions about, oh, what's going on? I'm worried about you. I'll be okay, Mom. Don't worry about it. This is my plan. And so looking back, it was great that I jumped into the unknown, and it forced us to have more meaningful conversations as well.
Well, that's pretty interesting. And I think that's not a common, I guess, response that you'd expect from like Asian parents. So I'm really happy for you though, that like you now maybe have like a deeper connection, conversation with your parents, even though that now you guys are farther away from each other. And I think that also talks about your maturity. Like, maybe it's also because you've matured while living abroad that you also maybe can understand them a lot better. Even though you'd like go opposite direction of what they'd like kind of recommend you to do. But I think it's like, maybe it's also your maturity that you're able to have like a stronger connection right now. And I also like what you said, that like you actually did it before you asked for permission. So this is like a saying that I also abide by a lot of times. Like, it's easier to ask for forgiveness than for permission. So I really like this way of doing things.
Yeah. And you know, you also bring up a good point as well, asking for permission. I think many times in Asian society, right, we tend to ask for permission from our elders, right? Is it okay to do something? You know, throughout my life, I did ask for permission, even if it was indirectly, right? I thought in my head, what would my mom and dad think if I did such a thing? And so now I've become actually a lot more independent as a result of perhaps some of the decisions I've made in my life so far. Yeah, sometimes you just do things without asking for permission and you see what happens. But also, connected with what you said, in Asian cultures, we tend to ask for permission, right, from our parents, even if it's indirectly. But as we grow older, as we become adults you know, do we still need to ask for permission? I think in Asian cultures, there's like filial piety, right? It's really about our elders. And yes, right. But right. Sometimes, you know, as adults, we have to live our own lives. And sometimes what our parents want for us, they might not know what's best for us, especially in a different world, a different culture, a different generation as well.
Exactly. The times are changing and not everything that they tell us would be like 100% correct. There's just this mentality like in Asian cultures that like your elders are always correct, regardless of their experience, because they're older, they've lived through life. Like you should kind of follow what they're telling you. But it's a different world, right?
Yeah. We've, you know, different generation, different culture. I think ultimately our parents want the best for us, right? Like want us to be happy.
100%. But
definitions of happiness have changed. And, you know, you know about Maslow's hierarchy of needs, right?
Yeah.
That's really helped me think through my relationship with my parents, because for them, you know, they grew up with something and then it was taken away from them, right? So for them, they were still at the first building block of it, the bottom, right? Stability, like security. So for them, like that was the most important thing for them because they didn't have it. And so for their kids, that's what they wanted for their kids. And for many of us, and I'm grateful enough to have that security, right? And so we kind of go up this pyramid towards like, you know, eventually, like meaning and purpose and self-actualization. That's the top, right? So yeah, like when you don't have security, that's your focus. That's your meaning and purpose. And so a lot of times our conflict was due to disconnect between what they thought of as success versus, you know, what I thought of as success.
Totally makes sense. Let's move back a bit. I'm just curious. So now we talk a bit about your parents, which would kind of lead me to my next question. So you mentioned you went to this trip in Zimbabwe, and that kind of later on led you to doing like education again in the Netherlands, right? So I guess my question would be, why the Netherlands, and what did your parents think about going back to school? Because I know for a fact that like typical Asian household, like higher education is given like, you know, high priority. Like parents like it when you want to pursue higher education. But at the same time, it's different when you stop working to actually pursue higher education, you know? How did that go with you, and what made you actually take that leap from corporate doing like a volunteer work and then to like studying again?
Yeah, well, coming to Europe was a lot easier because like as long as I wasn't going volunteering again, right? Because for my parents, it's really about stability. Like when you're volunteering, like what do you get out of volunteering? They don't understand that concept. And especially volunteering in a foreign place like Africa, at least coming to the Netherlands, I had this excuse that I was coming here to study and to progress in my career as well. For me, I spent a few years after my sabbatical really trying to understand my strengths, my values, what I wanted out of life, what I wanted to do. I looked for programs. I actually looked for programs in the US as well. My parents wanted me to stay closer. They were like, why don't you stay in the US, right? There's programs here. But then I showed them like a spreadsheet of like, okay, I can study here for 2 years and pay 100K, or I can potentially go to Europe and pay like 15K for 1 year.
Yeah.
So from a financial point of view, right, it made sense to come to Europe, because education in the US, it's really expensive, right?
Right.
So for me, it was a career decision. I wasn't volunteering again. And yes, my parents wanted me to be closer. They wanted me to be working. Of course, they understood the value of higher education. But when I explained to them that the cost of education was a lot cheaper, that the Netherlands, it's a great place to live. It's consistently ranked one of the countries with the highest quality of living. They understood my decision. But ultimately, they wanted me to come back, right? And they still do.
Yeah, of course. The typical parents, like, of course, even if you, whatever success you make abroad, of course, they want you to come back and spend time with them. Normal. I think that's, yeah, I'd expect that as well. Did you actually ever think of doing like studies or maybe even just working in China? Because you are like of Chinese descent, and you probably speak Mandarin or some of the dialects as well, right?
Yeah. So after, at the end of my sabbatical, I ended up in China where I spent a few months. And I spent a few months with my family because I realized how important family was to me. And I went to the village of my ancestors and I had a lot of time to reconnect with my family. And that was a beautiful experience. I actually wanted to stay in China to work. And so I was looking for jobs, actually, some teaching jobs, some corporate jobs. But my family members, many of my cousins told me, oh, you should go back because the working culture here, you're not going to be used to it coming from the West, right?
Right.
Yes, I did want to work there because I wanted to be closer to family. But eventually I went back. Now, do I still have dreams of going back to Asia? I do, in the future. I do want to be closer to family. And I still have dreams of one day, like, living and working in Asia. Now, where that is, China, Southeast Asia, I'm not sure. But
yeah,
I did have thoughts about staying in China. It's exciting. Things are moving so fast there. They've grown so much in the past 10, 20 years. It's amazing. But I also understand the working culture is so different, right? You have Asian working culture, you have American working culture, and now European working culture. So one day, it's still a possibility.
Yeah. I think the working cultures in all three continents are all very different from each other. I think just based on what I hear from my friends or whatever, in terms of, like, if you put it on a scale, like, in terms of, like, intensity, I think you have, like, Asian working culture on the left side, and then, like, you know, and somewhere also close to that is the US working culture. And then, like, the European one is a bit, like, the most, I'd say, like, relaxed, I think, like, on average for, like, a typical, you know, company in that continent.
Yeah. So for us, like, having worked in Europe, it would be kind of difficult, right? I think about this, to go back to the US, to go back to having 2 weeks of vacation, to go back to the work mentality. I think it would be a bit difficult, actually. Now, shifting from European work culture to Asian work culture, like, a question for you, like, do you think you could go back to the Philippines and work there? Or would it be difficult?
The nice thing about the Philippines that it's not as intense as, like, China, Japan, or Korea, but it's obviously not as, like, let's say, like, a bit more relaxed here in Europe, with, given, like, you know, you're strictly working from 9 to 5 and all the vacation days that comes with it. But yeah, I think I could. But the problem is, if I would move back to the Philippines or somewhere else in Southeast Asia that's not Singapore, I could not make the same kind of money. Do I want to make more money, but, like, sacrifice the quality of life? That's another question, right?
Yeah. These are big questions.
These are big questions, exactly. But yeah, that's actually where I wanted to kind of go in the conversation, is, like, in terms of, like, work culture. And we already actually spoke a bit about it. And how's actually living and working in Amsterdam like? So actually, maybe you could tell us about your YouTube channel a bit. And because the first video I saw on your YouTube channel was that video where you were talking about, you know, you living in Amsterdam. And maybe to a lot of people, Amsterdam is, like, that place you visit as a tourist to eat some space cakes, smoke some weed, look at the red light district, and these, like, cliche Amsterdam touristy things. But, like, what's actually living in Amsterdam like?
Yeah, so we'll talk about YouTube a bit later. That was my COVID project, right? And so I like talking about a few topics. One of them is hiking. One of them, it's about lifestyles. One of them is about living in Europe, my experiences in Amsterdam, in the Netherlands. And you're right. I think Amsterdam gets this stereotype of coffee houses, weed, red light district. But actually, Amsterdam is so much more. It's one of the most international places I've ever lived in. There's, I believe, I read somewhere where there's almost 200 different nationalities here. It's very diverse, right? When you come to a place like Amsterdam, everyone speaks English here. You have a lot of international offices, headquarters in Amsterdam. And so you see people from around the world here, pre-COVID. and now they're starting to come back as well.
Right.
And so it's a beautiful place to live. And I used to live in San Francisco and Los Angeles. And living here, it's a city, but it's, for me, it's not really like a city. It's like a big town feel. It's bustling, but it's a slower pace of life. There's a lot of things to do, right? Events. Before, I heard about all the festivals, and there's meetups here. it's a very old and beautiful city as well. So it's a mix of old and new together in this one big melting pot. Yeah, so far I've really enjoyed living in Amsterdam, and I hope to experience the city more because I moved to Amsterdam right before COVID. So, but so far so good.
Hey, that's good to hear. I also always hear positive things about living in Amsterdam. Besides the cost, I think it's one of the more costly cities to live in Europe. But besides that, like, social life is good. You know, everyone speaks English. It's just kind of easy. It's like everything's connected via public transport. If not, because you, like you mentioned, it's like, feels like a small village. You can also cycle around. And actually, last weekend, I was in Amsterdam visiting some friends. And I cycled around Amsterdam for the first time. Crazy experience, man. Like, in the city center, it's so busy. But once you cycle outside that, like, touristy city center and you go, like, to the outskirts, it gets a lot less touristy and, you know, more like what you said, like a town feel. But yeah, you're coming from San Francisco and LA. So I was kind of shocked that you said it's super multicultural, because I remember when I was in LA, I thought that, like, this is one of the most, like, international place I've been. But yeah, you're the one living in Amsterdam. So yeah, you have a better...
Yeah, they're both very... Like, San Francisco is very international. People go there to work in tech. Los Angeles is very international, very big as well. Amsterdam as well. And I think in LA, you don't really get to see it unless you have a car and you travel around. But here and also in San Francisco, you see it around you because you're able to walk and cycle and you see people from around the world surrounding you. So yeah, very international, similar to San Francisco, LA, just a different type of city. The Amsterdam is more similar to San Francisco in size, but LA is just huge, right? You have to be in a car, traveling everywhere. What I love about Amsterdam is I don't need to drive anymore. I cycle everywhere. I walk everywhere. I used to be in my car for 2 to 3 hours every day in LA, yeah. The traffic. I know, I'm sure you understand. And you know.
I've seen it. Yeah, I've seen it. It's crazy, man. But I guess you're right in terms of, like, density. It's because you actually see the people. You walk through the shops. But if you're like in LA and you drive from A to B, you always pass maybe the same freeway. Like, you don't really see the neighborhoods where other immigrants are living in. So I guess that's, yeah, you're right.
Yeah, so far it's been a great experience. It's been very, Amsterdam is also a very open place. You know, people come here from around the world, and there's a lot of different international cuisines here as well. So
that's true. That's true. But now you've been living there for a couple of years now, and in the Netherlands in general, like, you've also lived in Maastricht for a couple of years. Do you actually really miss something from the US besides friends and family? Or do you think Amsterdam is, like, for you right now, the place that you really want to be in?
Oh, there's a lot of things I miss about California, like the sun. Well, coming here, I knew about the weather. But I guess you don't really know until you experience it. And it is quite difficult coming from a place like California, right? Where it's sunny, especially in LA, most days out of the year. And then you come to the Netherlands and the summers are nice. The summers are beautiful.
Right.
Not this summer, though.
That's
not
true.
This summer.
No, you're right.
But the winters are quite brutal. The days are very short. It's windy. It's rainy. And so I do miss the sun. I also miss the food as well. Yes, there's a lot of international cuisines here, but you can't compare it to a place like LA where you have foods from different parts of the world and extremely authentic, right? So I do miss the food. I do miss the weather. And of course, I miss nature and hiking. The Netherlands is a flat country. I live in a city that's below sea level. And I miss hiking. I miss nature. That's a huge one. The nice thing about Europe, right, during normal times is you could hop on a plane and get to the Swiss Alps.
Correct.
But during COVID, it was difficult. Yes, there's a lot of parks, but for me, I love hiking. I love going up a mountain, down a mountain. Here, there's parks and cycling is really nice, but you don't get hiking here.
You have some beaches close by, but at the end of the day, it is the North Sea. So the water is very cold. But yeah, you're right. Like, you can take a plane. Maybe even you can take a train a couple of hours here in Ardennes in Belgium, and you have some nice hiking trails there. Or you can come here, close to Aachen is the Eiffel, and there's also nice hiking trails there. But yeah, you're right. Amsterdam is really, like, in that middle of the Netherlands where it's all like flat lands?
Yeah, everything's relative, right? So like for me, coming from a place like California, I'm used to mountains and nature and hiking elevation. And so coming here, it's a flat country, and which is great for cycling, but the hiking that I'm used to, I don't get that here. Mm-hmm, I remember when I first got to Maastricht, right? And I think it was orientation and we were sharing our interests and I was like, oh, I enjoy hiking. And I think there was one guy that told me, oh yeah, we have a mountain here in Maastricht, right? Yeah. And he told me, yeah, go to this place, what, St. Peter's? So I cycled there. And yes, I knew he was making a joke because like it's really a hill, but they call it
mountain. It is a hill. You're right. It is a hill. But there are lovely hikes around Maastricht anyway. Like they might not be your typical like up and down like with elevation, but there are some pretty beautiful areas there to hike. Huh?
Yeah, I loved living in Maastricht. It was more rural. And yeah, I did a lot of cycling into the countryside. And yeah, there are some nice hikes around there and into Germany as well.
That whole border region, it's dotted with a lot of history, like from the war, and also, yeah, just like some nice hiking trails. It's a nice place. And actually, I don't live very far from, well, the highest point of the Netherlands with the, I don't know if you've been there, the three country point.
Oh yeah, where you go around in a circle and you're in Germany, Netherlands, Belgium.
Yes. Exactly. Yeah. I don't live very far from that place.
Actually, there's some nice hiking around there.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. That's what I was going to say. There are nice hiking like areas around this place. Yeah, it's beautiful, man. And if you miss that, could be a good excuse to visit me.
Yes. You know, when you think about it, yeah, there are some nice hikes in parts of the country here. You for just sure. have to find them.
Yes. That's true. So you were saying like there's some stuff you miss, obviously, but would you actually right now consider moving back, or do you have kind of some, you know, regrets you still have of moving to Amsterdam or moving to Europe in general?
No regrets. Of course, no one could have predicted COVID to happen. For me, and I've talked to a lot of people here as well, and people ask me all the time, especially friends and family, when are you coming back? And my response is always, I don't know. And that's the honest answer. I don't know when I'm coming back, if I will go back. I'm taking everything like 6 months, a year at a time. And what I want to do is I really want to experience Amsterdam as a city. And I'm hopeful and excited to see the city. But will I go home? I think eventually I will, because my parents are getting older. And with Asian families, family is like the most important thing, right? And my parents, and they are getting older. My family is back in the U.S., and so eventually I think I see myself going back, but when that is, I'm not sure.
How about in terms of like working in the US? Now that you're working in Europe, is there any part of like American work culture that you actually sometimes miss?
Yeah. One thing that, and this is the mentality that we grew up with, right? It's a lot of competition growing up in school, right, and also in work. And it's good and bad, right? It's bad because sometimes you overwork yourself. It can get toxic, right? And also, you know, based on some of the laws they have there, there's a lot of fear built into the culture, right? You can get fired for any reason. Here, it's really difficult to get fired in Netherlands.
So you have to really screw up big time, right?
Yeah, you have to really screw up big time. So there's that fear that's built into the working culture, that ambition, but also that ambition is what I do miss a lot. And the ambition you see, especially in a place like San Francisco, people are very ambitious. They want to become the next, you could say, Steve Jobs or Elon Musk. They want to be part of these big startups, IPOs. And so people, I feel like, are very ambitious in certain parts of the US, like San Francisco. Right. And also in LA too, it's like people there want to make it in Hollywood or entertainment. So there is that ambition that I do miss. And it's very different from here, right? Because especially in Dutch culture, it's really about being average. And that's what I really love as well, right? People here value being average. In the US, people value being ahead and standing out. There's parts of both that I do enjoy. I do like it here because you feel like you're not comparing yourself as much. In the US, you always feel like you're in some type of race comparing yourself.
Right,
at the same time, there's that level of ambition that really drove me to be a better self. So that's what I do miss, that level of ambition.
Yeah, I like how you said it, that like a lot of people are just happy being average. And this is also true, very true in Germany. And I'm just thinking, you know, in the Philippines, you can't really think of just being average, because being average, because we are a developing country, right? The Philippines, being average means being poor. So like everyone has to like really strive to be good at what they're doing. If not, you'll never afford a house. Basically, you'll live with your parents until you die. So this is kind of like, I understand your mentality, because here being average means you can afford a house easily.
Yeah, like here in the Netherlands, you could work at a restaurant or McDonald's and it's normal.
Right.
And people won't really judge you as they would in the US.
Exactly.
And the thing is that you can get by working minimum wage here, right? You might not be able to afford the most lavish things, but most people here don't really care to have like a Ferrari or a Bentley, right? And it's part of the culture here. There's also more social support here as well. There's a big percentage of housing here that's dedicated to social housing. And so there is that social infrastructure that you don't really have in the US.
You're right. And I just heard that story last week about Amsterdam having like a lot of the houses in Amsterdam are like social housing that you have to wait for like a decade before you could get accepted into these social housing projects. But yeah, I was surprised that like someone said it's like what, 30-40%? I don't remember the exact figure, but it was like a big chunk of the houses in Amsterdam are actually.
Yeah, I was also surprised by that as well. I think it's, yeah, like 30-40% of it's like social housing, and you could be living in a unit and you could have perhaps like a CEO, and then next to the CEO, maybe it's, you know, someone with social housing. And I think it's a beautiful thing.
It's beautiful. That's true. It's beautiful. At the same time, like I would never expect that. Like Amsterdam is such an expensive city, but this is how the system works. And
yeah. And one thing I realized is, okay, when I first thought about living and working here in the Netherlands, I was a bit confused if I wanted to stay here. Because, well, one, with that American mentality, you're always thinking about how much money I'm going to make. And here, you make a lot less than someplace like San Francisco. You also pay a lot of taxes as well. But I do see where the taxes are going. And it's really for the infrastructure. It's for maintaining a high quality of life here for everyone. Because you go to a place like San Francisco, and yeah, you'll see a lot of the tech workers making six-figure salaries. And on the side of those offices, you see tents and homeless people. And that's a big like contrast, right? You see someone working at a Facebook, Google, and then right outside their offices, there's a lot of homeless people. Yeah, that was a big reverse culture shock when I went back to the US.
I'd expect also Amsterdam, because it's so expensive, right? And you have a lot of these social projects. You know, not everybody gets accepted into these social projects. So my assumption was, you know, you have probably people who are not accepted, so you'll see a couple of homeless people there, but which is actually not true. Like you go there and everything's feels kind of perfect, you know? But I also think in general, like salaries, like the disparity between like, you know, your CEO and like the lowest level person is not that high. It won't be like, you know, 1,000 times higher or 100 times higher. I think this is what my expectation is, because, or maybe I just don't see it. Could be wrong, huh?
You're right. You're right. There is a big pay gap between executives in the US and the average worker, right?
Right.
You could have an executive making $50 million, right?
Right.
And the average worker there gets paid something a lot less, maybe $40,000 or something like that.
Yeah.
And here, it's smaller. It's a lot smaller.
Yeah. I love that. Yeah. I think that's something that like the world should strive for, you know, getting that gap smaller, because it's just sad to see. Like, it obviously the Philippines is the same, right? The disparity between the rich and the poor is becoming starker and starker, and probably COVID is not helping and would actually even magnify that situation. So I don't know what to expect when I eventually visit back home, but I think this is a worldwide problem which a lot of the countries in Europe are able to get somehow like control.
And like the thing about the US, there's like pros and cons, right? It's capitalism. The definition of capitalism is the US. And yeah. But the thing is, I've started to ask myself, do I really need like a $50 million? right, to live a good life? Do I need $1 million, $2 million, $10 million? I don't
know. No. You need like good healthcare and you need like good social infrastructures to help you get around. And personally, I'd be happy with that, proper place to live in and simple. Like you kind of think about things a bit more simply. I was the same in the Philippines because it's either you're up here or you're drowning, right? And I had like dreams of, you know, making it big or whatever. But now, like, I wouldn't say I'm striving to become average, but I mean, I'm still ambitious, but I don't want to be like super ambitious where I'll step on everybody else to get like to the top of the mountain.
Yeah. And it goes back to what's the definition of success for you? And it's a question that I ask myself from time to time, like, what's my definition of success?
And have you figured that out already?
Oh, that's a big question. I'm still trying to figure that out. But it's changed. I can tell you it's changed because the definition before was, you know, get a good job, make X amount of dollars, family, three-story house, or whatever you call it, right? This American dream. And now it's changed a lot. I value different things. Like I value flexibility. I value time to travel. And that's what's really nice about Europe, right? Being able to jump on a plane and you'll be in Spain in no time, or get to Paris in 4 hours from here. Yeah, my definition has definitely changed.
And it will keep on changing as, you know, the world changes. And as you obviously also mature, the people you meet, obviously people will have impact on you, your situation and your work and whatever. Yeah, that's a conversation for another time, I think.
I know, we're going way deep for like a lunch chat.
My bad.
Every conversation with me, we go pretty deep. Just FYI.
I know, man. But yeah, David, maybe you could introduce actually your YouTube channel and what your idea for it is in the future. Like, what are the projects that you want to do there?
You know, with YouTube, it was born out of my idea of like, I just want to learn how to make videos. I've always been a photographer. I've enjoyed taking pictures and I wanted to get better at filmmaking, especially during COVID. There was really nothing to do. And so I just started making random videos, right? The first video I made was actually the Camino de Santiago, and that somehow just blew up. I just filmed that with my iPhone and that blew up.
It has like 100,000 views or something. I looked at it the other day. Is it like 100,000 views or something?
Yeah, there's close to like 900,000, which is mind-blowing.
Oh, 900,000?
Yeah. See? There's a big community there. And from that experience, I realized that, yeah, you can connect with people from around the world because connection for me is really important. And sure. I've never been someone that's like front and center, like social media. But through YouTube, I realized the power of connecting with people, sharing a story, and potentially inspiring someone to potentially walk this Camino, or to maybe move to Amsterdam. And so during the year of COVID, being indoors, I just decided to make videos. I had nothing else to do. And I make videos about hiking, but because I couldn't hike, I started thinking about, oh, maybe I'll make videos about Amsterdam. So I started just filming, shooting, and just experimenting with videos. And so my channel right now, it's still in the middle of like, what do I want my channel to be about? But I want it to be about inspiring other people to question, what does success mean for them? Does it mean moving to Europe? Does it mean changing careers? Does it mean hiking? I don't know. But getting people to think differently, but more stopping to pause and reflect on their lives. Okay, what do I want success to be in my life?
That's exactly why I invited you for this chat. It's because I think that's where our projects align. So my podcast obviously also wants to share people's stories like yourself, try to motivate other people to kind of do something differently, or maybe pursue something that they've always wanted to pursue, but maybe there's some other elements that are hindering them from actually pursuing them. So that's why I love talking to you. I enjoyed this conversation so much.
Yeah, me as well. I mean, it's always nice to catch up and to chat. And we went pretty deep there. And hopefully we can continue deeper in another conversation. Because if we talk about the Camino, that's something that's quite deep.
We'll be doing another episode about the Camino, hopefully soon. And for anyone there who's listening and who wants to follow David's YouTube channel, I'll be leaving the link on the description. So yeah, David, thank you so much for joining us today. You have anything else you want to say?
Well, thanks so much, Lawen, for inviting me. Well, I hope you enjoy your day, and I hope you take a moment to stop, pause, and really reflect, what does success mean for you?
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of Pop Your Cultural Cherry. You can listen to us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and other podcast streaming platforms. To be updated with our latest episodes, don't forget to give us a like and a follow on our Facebook page and our Instagram account.